You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic.
Tired of toxic fly sprays that don't work? Bye-bye Insects is the fly spray that delivers botanical ingredients and powerful protection. The science-backed formula smells amazing, works even better, and is safe for both you and your horse. No toxic chemicals, no compromise, just comfort you can count on, in the barn or on the trail. Bye-bye Insects by Spalding Labs. Get yours now at spalding-labs.com.
I'm your host, Haley Kerstetter, and my guest today is Tom Keene, former agronomy specialist at the University of Kentucky. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So our topic today is one that I think our readers and listeners have heard a lot about, but we don't go in depth with it very often, and that's hay testing. So can you start with the basics and tell us what is hay analysis and why is it important for horse owners and barn managers to do this semi-regularly?
Well, it's very important, especially if you're concerned about the diet and health of the horse. And as with any other livestock enterprise, you know, we have many different kinds of animals that we're feeding in the equine industry, whether it's a barren mare, a mare that's growing a foal inside of her, a mare with a foal at her side, a racing horse, a stallion, a retired horse. So we have a lot of different animals that we're trying to feed. And in order to get their diet right, whether it's you're consulting with a veterinarian or a nutritionist, to have that data that a hay test supplies is very important when balancing that ration for that horse. Just like when you and I might go to the grocery, we would look on the label to find the parameters that we're concerned about to make our diets appropriate or our diets for our children. Having those numbers and having that analysis provides us an opportunity to get that ration just right.
Awesome. And can you tell us what are the key nutrients or components that are tested in a standard hay analysis report? And what do those numbers actually tell us?
So those numbers vary dramatically. And there's anywhere probably from 10 to 12 numbers that you would receive on an analysis once you submit a sample, all the way up to probably 50 plus or more different numbers that you would receive on a report. Again, you would want to visit with your veterinarian, your nutritionist, or, you know, if you're familiar, if the barn manager or the farm manager is familiar with the nomenclature and the chemistries and so forth that are involved with those numbers, then that's good. But, you know, some of the basic ones that we look at are obviously dry matter. We're looking at crude protein. We're looking at fiber components. We're looking at digestibility. We're looking at energy. And so, you know, it goes on and on, and relative feed value, TDN, total digestible nutrients. So that's just to name a few, but the list is quite extensive depending upon the kind of test that you get.
Can you tell us how do hay nutrient levels vary based on factors such as cutting, region, or grass type? I know this is really important for our readership because they're spread out over such a large area, basically right. The entire country. And are there some types that are more consistent than others?
Well, they do vary a great deal across this great country of ours. And they vary from east to west and also from north to south, and probably more from north to south. And the components of that hay, just as we talked about the number of parameters you receive on a test result, the number of different types of hay that are available across the country are many and varied. Primarily, we have two types of hay. We have what we call a grass hay, which would consist of something like fescue, ryegrass, timothy, orchard grass, Bermuda grass, Bahia grass, those type of things. And then we have legumes, which might entail alfalfa, red clover, white clover, lespedeza. You know, there's all kinds of legumes as well. So Typically, legumes are higher in protein. They fix nitrogen from the atmosphere. So when we're looking at nitrogen and protein as part of the diet and something that gives us energy, just like we humans, you know, protein provides that. And so pure alfalfas, pure clovers, those type of things are generally going to be higher in nutritive value. Grasses such as orchard grass and ryegrass and fescue, those types typically are less, have less protein, more fiber. And then you obviously you have those separately, but a lot of hays that you either grow on your farm or you purchase will have a blend of those. You'll have half legume and half grass. So again, it all depends on the mixture of that hay. That's why, again, we want to go back to that test that we talked to in the very beginning. And, you know, the thing that affects forage quality the most, again, within the legumes and within the grasses, is the stage of maturity that plant is cut at. And so if you cut something that is in a young stage, very vegetative stage, versus something that has bloomed out and has a seed head, that younger grass is going to be more nutritious. That younger legume is going to be more nutritious. The older stuff is not going to be quite as good. If you go and you look at an Olympic athlete and how strong and all and how they're built up, and then you look at someone that's older like me, you know, they can do a lot more. So you want something that's a young cut grass. That stage of maturity will be the thing that determines the quality of that the most. And when we look at that analysis, Haley, as you mentioned, we can take all those numbers, but the animal performance is really the greatest test for what that forage is when we're feeding it to those horses. So it's very, I don't mean to give you a vague answer, but there's just a lot of components that go into it.
Definitely. And you touched on one of the key themes of this podcast in general, no matter what we're talking about, is it really depends on the individual. So I think our listeners are very used to that. And hopefully by now they know that they should be listening to what their individual horse tells them as well.
Exactly.
So this is a question that we get a lot, and that's how often should barns be testing their hay, and is there a best time to submit samples? I know that barns get hay at varying times of the year, and they might get, you know, some barns can just do like 2 or 3 loads a year, and some barns have to get it once a month. So what would you recommend there?
So if we're talking about hay that's brought into the farm, we're not talking about hay that we're growing on the farm. We're talking about hay that we're purchasing and bringing in on the farm. When you're purchasing that hay, let's just take as an example, we get a load of alfalfa from XYZ hay dealer, and we tell him, look, we want this same type of hay for the next 6 months. Can you provide it? Yes. Okay. Is it going to be from the same provider? Is it going to be the same cutting? You need to ask some of those questions. And then when that hay gets on the premises, obviously, you'll be able to look at it and say, well, this is the exact same hay we got last time, or it's not the exact same hay. So if you're getting the same hay from the same company that was grown on the same farm and it's the same cutting, then, you know, one analysis of that is probably good. If you're getting 2 or 3 different types of hay to feed different animals, again, you're getting some really nice alfalfa to feed stallions and yearlings, and you're getting some pure Timothy to feed some barren mares, then obviously you're going to have 2 different tests. But as long as those hays are the same as they're coming in, again, they're from the same farm, they're the same cutting, they were, you know, cut in the same year, you know, one analysis is probably good. But if your supplier is going from different farmer to different farmer and you're getting in, you know, clover hay one load, you're getting an alfalfa hay, another load, then you want to test every load. But as long as it's consistent, it's from the same dealer, it's from the same farm, it's the same cutting, then one analysis done correctly will give you a really good idea as to what the nutritional value of that hay is.
So when you're talking about the different types of hay analysis that people can do, can you tell us what's the difference between a basic analysis and a more comprehensive one? And when would you recommend that someone get a more thorough report?
Well, again, it's kind of like us. I mean, if you're someone and if you have problems with diabetes or something, then you want to get your blood sugar checked, you know, very regularly and those type of things. If you have high blood pressure, then obviously you check your blood pressure. If you have a lot of issues, then maybe you want to do something more expansive. The basic analysis that you're probably going to get on an analysis is moisture, crude protein, acid detergent fiber, nutri-detergent fiber. You're going to get TDN. You're going to get net energy for lactation, net energy for maintenance. You'll probably get a relative feed value score. You might get a relative forage quality score. So, you know, it's going to be pretty easy to read. There's not going to be too awful many parameters. But if you really, you know, if you have a nutritionist that really wants to get into the vitamins and the minerals and the energy levels and the digestibilities and those type of things, then you're going to ask for a way more comprehensive report than if you're just looking for the basics.
Can you walk us through the process of actually collecting hay to sample to be sure that you get an accurate test? We get this question a little bit from our readers as well.
Right. So most horse owners, well, I shouldn't say that now. Things have changed dramatically in the last few years. But if you have a square bale, for instance, whether it's a small square bale or one of the bigger size square bales, you want to have a round core that is on the end of a drill. And you want to take that core on the butt end of the bale. So on the short square end of the bale, not the long side of the bale, but the smaller side of the bale. You want to make sure that core is good and sharp. You want to go in approximately 12 to 18 inches. You want to take that core out. You want to put it in a plastic bucket of some kind or plastic container. And then depending upon the size of the amount of hay you're testing, we call that a lot of hay, a new word lot. That kind of depends on how many cores you're going to take. But you want to take those cores, let's say you took 20 of them, you put them in a plastic pail, you're going to mix those up, you're going to take those and put them in a plastic bag of some kind, you're going to put it in a dark, cool place. Maybe leave the bag open just in case there's any respiration still going on in there. And then you're going to send it to a laboratory. And then obviously you'll fill out all the information about what type of hay it is, what cutting it is, and those type of things. You'll send that to the lab. And then within, depending upon, you know, how busy the lab is, you should get the analysis back within a week to 10 days. But it's very important to use a plastic bucket. It's very important to keep that sample in a cool, dry, dark place once you take it. You don't want to take it and throw it up on the dash of the truck or throw it over in the seat of the pickup while you're driving around for 2 or 3 days, because that will affect the quality. But you want to do that, and you want to get that to the lab. Now, at the end of this, I know you're going to provide some information to our listeners. One place that you can go to find out what kind of cores are available, how to take a proper sample in labs that are certified through the National Forage Testing Association program. If your listeners will go to foragetesting.org, a lot of that information is available to them there.
That's super helpful. I know that our listeners really appreciate having a place to go to find this information at a later time, because, as you know, a lot of them are listening while they might be mucking stalls or driving around and need to go look at it later. Yep. So can you tell us what are some common mistakes that people might make when interpreting hay analysis results and how they can avoid them, or mistakes they might make when it comes to using those results to accurately feed the horses?
Well, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, I think it's very important with these numbers that are generated on the report is that you have someone that can understand them on a fairly decent level. I won't say intricate, but on a decent level. And equine are very different. When we're testing for equine hay, when we're trying to get those results, it's definitely different than we're doing it for, say, dairy cows or beef cows. In those instances, when we're feeding a product, we want to maximize the amount of gain that we're getting on beef cattle, for instance. Or if we're looking at dairy cows and we're feeding them hay, then we want to get the maximum pounds of milk production out of them as we can. In the in the equine industry, we're looking for, you know, steady growth. We're looking for that growth that keeps that conditioning on that mare just right. We're looking at that conditioning that keeps the mare's body score right, and then she's able to produce milk for that foal. If we have horses on the racetrack, then we need a lot of energy for those training animals. If we've got breeding stallions and it's the breeding season, you know, here in Lexington, the breeding season, a lot of energy there. So I think we get kind of caught up in the numbers sometimes, and we need to look at the equine ration totally different, I think, than we do the dairy or the beef ration. So I think a lot of times we put these numbers in the idea that we're wanting maximum production. That's why we paid all this money, or we paid this money to get this sample. We need to utilize all these numbers. But I think we need to utilize them for the animal that we're feeding so that we don't get animals too fat. We obviously don't want them ribby. So we want to make sure that we use them just right. And I think a lot of times when we get those numbers, we think, well, we've got to use them all. We've got to balance it just right and this type of thing. That's why I think it's really important to have a veterinarian, a nutritionist, or someone, a farm manager or whatever, that understands these numbers and can apply them to that specific animal that's receiving the hay.
So this question is specific to me personally, because I have two miniature horses that are extremely easy keepers. Can you tell us how hay analysis can help with managing horses with special dietary needs, such as performance horses or those with metabolic conditions or breeding horses?
Well, again, it goes back to that specific animal that you're feeding. And, you know, if you've got an easy keeper, then, you know, you probably don't need that really high test alfalfa orchard grass, alfalfa Timothy, that's really supercharged and is going to be for that performing animal, you know, whether it's horse shows or on the racetrack or wherever the case might be. You know, you might be able to get by with just some Timothy or some grass hay that is an easy keeper, you know, they just kind of nibble at, you know, with a simple stomach. You know, they're not like cows where they just graze and they sit down and ruminate. The horses are kind of constantly eating and that type of thing. So if you've got an easy keeper, then you're probably going to want something that, you know, doesn't put on a lot of weight, but yet keeps them grazing, you know, keeps them active, you know, rather than pacing in the stall or cribbing or, you know, that kind of thing. If you've got a horse that is, you know, has a dietary requirement, maybe they just put on weight so fast, you know, you have to muzzle them or something. You know, you've got to be careful. I know there's a lot of work being done now about fructans and those types of things, the sugars, simple sugars, complex sugars that need to be considered when working with these different animals, especially if you've got a specific dietary requirement. So, you know, I hate to keep going back to it, but it's a lot more complicated than sometimes we make it out to be.
Awesome. So my final question for you is, if someone has never done a hay analysis before, what are the first steps you recommend to get started, and where could they go for help with interpreting results? Personally, that was really daunting for me, at least when I was first looking into a hay analysis when I had never done one before.
Right. Well, I mentioned that website a little bit earlier, forgetesting.org. So that's where I would start. And the first place I would go to is I would go to the list of probes that are available on that. And if you go to the reference tab, it'll have a list of the hay probes that are out there nowadays, you know, where you can buy them and that type of things. And so that's where I would start. And then I would go, there's another article in there that says how to take a hay sample. We talked about this a little bit earlier, You know, again, make sure that probe is good and sharp. If you're testing a square bale, again, you want to go into the butt end of the bale in the center of the bale. You know, you want to make an X on the back of that bale, top to bottom, and then where the X intersects is where you want to take that core. Again, depending upon how many bales you're testing for, you know, if you've only got 50 bales, then you may want to test 5 bales. But if you've got 500 bales, you probably want to test 20 to 25 bales. So again, it kind of depends on how big the lot is. If you're testing round bales, then again, you don't want to go from the side. You want to go from the round end, and you want to take that core, and you want to go directly toward the center of the bale, in the middle of the bale, so that you're getting as representative a sample as you can. And then also on that website, they have a list of certified laboratories that follow the protocols of the National Forage Testing Association. And so you have a pretty good assurance that the analysis you get back is going to be accurate. And so I would certainly encourage you that. There's also a publication out there. It's called Understanding Forage Quality. It's been in production for 30 years now, but it's still very solid with about much of the information that you and I have discussed here today. And so I would recommend that for the forage testing website and then this publication called Understanding Forage Quality.
Awesome. And for those listening who are unable to use their phone right now, we'll link all of these things in the show notes so that you can take a look at them later.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but it's been awesome talking with you today. Thank you so much for joining me.
My great pleasure.
And thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.